Hello, world! Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. We are preempted tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI. However, I'm Hank Key, and I'm in the studio of PRN.FM with Joe King. You can listen to the stream on the internet or with your telephone on 712-775-6850 if you have unlimited minutes on your phone. For more information, you can go to our website, pcradioshow.org. For those who want to hear the podcast of the Personal Computer Show on the telephone, the call-to-listen number is 701-719-1003. You can simply dial this number to listen to the feed and pick which episode to play by dialing 1 to 5 to select the episode, 1 being the latest episode. And if you need to hang up or take another call, no problem. You just resume playing where you left off by pausing, rewind, or fast forward. I was notified just last night that PC Magazine, one who made it such a big success, Bill McCrum, just passed away this weekend, and I do mourn his passing. I've known him for a while, and Bill McCrum was the editor-in-chief of PC Magazine from 1983 to 1991. And he continued to write for that magazine up until a few years ago. And in September of 1983, he became editor-in-chief, and in his tenure, the magazine grew at an enormous pace, moving from monthly to semi-monthly frequency. And I remember how thick these magazines were. They were thick. And in 1991, Bill was appointed Ziff Davis Vice President of Technology, and he founded the Ziff Davis Labs.
You know, Hank, that shortly after he got that job as editor-in-chief, he joined us on these microphones, and we had a very fascinating discussion with him, at the end of which I asked him if he wanted to go down and have a beer or a cup of coffee with me, and he said he would love to, but he had to rush home because he had a brand-new daughter.
Well,
she's now out of college.
After his major stint at PC Magazine, he went on to start other magazines for Ziff Davis. Bill was 69, and he is survived by his wife, Sharon, and his children, Andrew and Stephanie. So you'll probably be talking about Stephanie.
Indeed. Time goes too fast, and Bill is one of the people who will be in my memory forever.
Yeah, I understand that we have a caller. This is the Personal Computer Show. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Hank. It's Carla.
Yes, Carla. Where are you from?
Brooklyn.
How can we help you?
Well, what I wanted to ask you is I have a landline, and Verizon is insisting that I change over to the fiber optic line. I don't want to do that.
Why don't you?
Well, first of all, I'm not on the computer that much, so I don't need it for that. I really just need it for the phone. But also, in an emergency, they're going to give me that thing that has a battery in it that will only last for a certain length of time. I've got to keep replenishing those batteries.
Well, not really.
No,
because
it's every 2 years.
It's every 2 years.
Yeah.
And actually, I found out that you can call their service department and they'll provide you with a new battery.
No, you have to pay for it.
No, out in Long Island, I didn't.
Long Island? Well, I had to pay for mine, and it died after 2 years, and it cost me like $49. And
oh, that's a lot.
Well, so you know what? I bought it from them, but you could buy from a third party. A third party, the battery costs about $25,
$30. But our caller's point is different. She's not on a computer. She doesn't have television. This is just a telephone for her.
And can I tell you what the advantage is? If you use the Fios part of it for the landline,
mm-hmm.
it's 24/7 unlimited phone calls, 50 states.
Mm-hmm. You know what? My real question is, do you know of anywhere to turn where I could have a copper line? Just port my phone number over to someone that has a copper line.
No, they are the only ones.
You
live in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, sometimes in Manhattan, I am as well.
Well, let me put it this way. They're the only ones with a copper line, and once that goes out, there'll be no more copper line going to you.
That's correct. I had Fios in a Long Island residence that I was supervising, and then when we changed out of Fios, we still had VoIP, voice over IP, because they would not reactivate the copper. So once you're out of the copper, you're out of the copper. On the other hand, if you don't have any need for television and you don't have any need for internet, you might as well stay with the copper.
And wait, and you have no need to call anyone long distance, and you don't mind a limited number of minutes.
I'm just saying, if you want the kind of telephone you have right now, you can tell them you don't want Fios. That is an option.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean you'll stay with copper. They still might switch you over to voice over IP, but you won't be paying for Fios. It'll be your regular phone.
Carla, let me just say that I switched from a... only in the last 2 years I switch over to the Verizon fiber optics, and I've had no problems at all. I resisted for a long time because I was carrying a monitor, and whenever the monitor went off, I had to go to an analog phone. So I said, I need, you know, the digital phone didn't fit my requirements, but all medical devices now are digital, so that was one of the things that I had to wait for.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only what you're saying there, Joe, is that they would. I don't have to switch, but evidently I do have to switch. I have a project manager calling me now, and they're trying to finish off where I live, and then they go on to another area.
That's right.
By the way,
the fact that you have the president of Verizon calling you still doesn't mean you have to switch.
Carla, you could just simply say, make me an offer.
Yes, that's the other thing. you know, let me tell you a funny story. Last year, suddenly, with Verizon DSL, that's their standard copper, the speed of my internet kept going slower and slower and slower, and I had them up twice. And then Stevie, our former engineer who had retired from Verizon, gave me the phone number of the president's office and said, asked to speak to the ombudsman. He said it's actually a woman, but it's ombudsman. And I spoke and I called to her, and I said, I'll happily switch to Fios, but you don't have it in my building, and what are you going to do? Because I'm paying for DSL, and I'm getting dial-up speeds. And she thought about it and said, we should have it fixed by next year. Suppose I don't charge you until next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it free for 6 or 7 months, and then I went back to the slow speed, but I had averaged down the price that way.
Carla, let me just say that from a performance point of view, it's not a problem, okay?
No, that I understand. I'm not concerned about that. I just I don't like the idea of this emergency thing at all. I don't like, even though I guess you I don't know. I just don't like that.
Well, let me put it this way.
He told me, I brought it up to him, and he actually said that I have to get my battery replacement from either Amazon or I can go to Home Depot, and there's 12 batteries. I mean, it's
No. It's a one battery. I have it, okay? It's a single, it's a large size battery. It's about half the size of a car battery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a big battery, okay?
Oh, no, mine was much smaller than that. It was
Wait a minute. I live in a private house, so I see everything. What they put in your basement, you don't see.
I did. I'm telling you, Hank, I had it. The battery that I had was a standard.
Carla, I hope that answers your question. If you still have any more, just let us know, and you can always send us an email on pcradioshow.org, and
I'm not on the email. I'm not on that. So, in other words, the final answer is there's no copper. I just have to.
Yeah.
The final answer is that you can refuse to be forced into it. Their contract with the state of New York is that they will provide you with standard phone service. Try and get them to pay you. If they want you to switch, try and get a deal with. They provide the batteries for your lifetime.
Joe, Carla wants to be known as a Luddite. Okay, so that's her right. To be known as a Luddite.
No, if you were a Luddite, which Hank doesn't understand, you wouldn't even have your telephone.
So in other words, if I can, there is some resistance I can do with the state. They're not required that I get off of copper. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. But however,
you would deal with the State Public Service Commission.
Yeah.
And you can call them, and they'll tell you. Oh, you can call them on the phone, and they'll be very courteous and tell you how you can handle it.
However, if the state gets involved, they may just say, it doesn't matter, they can do it, okay? Mm-hmm. Just remember that, because I had a similar case with that in another organization where it went to the highest level and it was holding up the whole project for a community, and the state just said, no, you know, it's going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
Okay. I already called public service, but not about that. I didn't realize I could refuse this.
Okay.
I thought they were mandated, because, you know, it's been in the newspaper.
Yes.
How everybody's so upset that they're not getting it done. So,
well,
the reason
a lot of people are upset that they're not getting it, because Verizon has said everybody can have it, and they're getting paid as if everybody has it. When I made the complaint, I was told, oh, no. My building has Fios. What they meant was my building would have access to Fios, but it doesn't, but it could.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pain in the neck. I wish you more luck, Carl, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Carla. I understand we have another caller from Adam. Adam, are you from the Bronx?
Yes.
Excuse me. Before we talk to you, Adam, I'm looking at our engineer, and I'm smiling, because just before we went on the air, I said to him, you know, we get so few calls, maybe we should stop accepting them, and that's all we've had so far.
And this is the first time I did not announce the phone number, and now we get phone calls. I didn't announce the number.
What is the phone number? I don't know.
888-874-4888.
Did you know that,
Adam? It's on the web page.
You got it from the web page. Okay.
Okay. Listen, for anyone who wants to call, we will try to answer your call. It's 888-874-4888.
Well,
Adam?
Now that Hank has announced that, Adam, I'm sure you're the last caller of the evening.
How can we help you, Adam?
Well, when Superstorm Sandy hit, I had a copper line,
mm-hmm.
and the power went out. And I didn't have a problem with the phone service. And I even after a few days, I even stayed at a different location. And I had an answering machine that had a battery in it. And I was able to get messages on the answering machine from that other location. And everything kept working because I didn't need to use a backup battery on the phone that lasts 8 hours only if you don't use it.
Adam, when that big storm hit, we were in a studio on Wall Street, and 140 West Broadway was like it was underwater. I mean, like, you know, on Wall Street, the water went up to the second floor, and everything got, you know, ruined. And because of the salt in the water, it just damaged all the equipment. And one of the silliest thing that the city mandated was that all the transformers and the power generators had to be in the basement. So everything was just basically gone. And in downtown Manhattan, there was no phone service for the longest time. So we could talk about copper being reliable, but when you get a big storm like that and you don't know what the circumstances are, you may or may not have it.
Well, even when you say copper is reliable, VoIP, voice over IP, is just as unreliable. Up until Superstorm Sandy, the Verizon in my building was 4 bars. After Superstorm Sandy, it was 1.5 bars. They've been trying to figure it out for how many years now?
Now, wait a minute, Joe. In your case, they figure it was you. Oh, it's Joe King. We're going to make it worse for him.
I think that Hank is right. Hank is a little bit weird, paranoid, but I think in this case he's right.
Adam, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to do some backfill. Last week, Apple announced updates to their MacBook Pro, and it really didn't receive that much attention. A lot of people sort of like, okay. So, but I read the specs a little more carefully, and with the MacBook Pro, they will know the unit will, you know, both the 13-inch and the 15-inch unit will no longer include the standard USB port. However, they will have 4 USB-C ports. Oh, that's good.
Well, why don't you tell us what the USB-C port is?
Well, it's a faster speed, but the connector is slightly different.
So I can't use my old...
No. You can use your old stuff so long as you have the adapter for it, okay?
But I would need an adapter.
Yes. Now, I'll tell you what they took out, though, which kind of surprised me, but I understand it, okay? The MacBook Pro will no longer have the MagSafe charging feature, and... what that MagSafe charging feature is that they had 2 LED lights on the connecting cable, And while you're charging, one LED light will go on, and when it's fully charged, your other LED light would go on. And to me, I could understand why they're doing it, very simply because the less lights you have, the longer the battery will last. The other thing is the Thunderbolt port is also eliminated. They're able to connect other devices on it, and looks like they're going to eliminate that. And the remember the logo on, when you have an Apple notebook, you have a lit logo.
On the cover.
On the cover. They took that out. And reason why is because it uses battery power. So they're really stretching it. So I understand all that. But one of the things that they're eliminating, which has me scratching my head, the SD slot. They're eliminating the SD card.
A lot of manufacturers are doing that. I did a little checking into it. It's not the fact that the card is expensive. They're not providing the card, but it's the slot costs, $0.50, 75 cents.
The problem is if you buy an external unit, you got to use up one of your USB ports.
Well, the thing is, for example, with the new Google Pixel, it did away with the slot. They're selling it in a 32-gig version and a 128-gig version. And if right now you are worried about the money and you buy the 32-gig version and later on you want to expand it, you can't. I won't buy a phone right now without a slot, which really limits what phones I can buy.
Now, the new MacBook Pro, they have two versions of it. One is with a non-touch bar and one is with a touch bar. What the touch bar is, instead of having a touch screen and maybe a whole lot of keys, like with the function keys, escape key, and so on, they eliminate many of the keys, like the escape keys one, and they have a bar on the top of the keyboard where you can program different and customize it for different touches. In other words, you could touch here, you get this function, you touch there for that function. To me, it's sort of like you got that with just by reassigning your keys, you can do that today.
Again, I'm sure if you look into the breakdown of it, they're saving 75 cents by doing that.
One of the big news that that happened last week was, for those who may be a Twitter user, you probably hear about Twitter trying to sell itself, and they've been very unsuccessful trying to sell itself to Google. Looked at it. They're not interested. Verizon looked at it. They're not interested. Apple looked at it. Seems like everyone's looked at it. Says, I don't see it. You can make any money on it. And one of the things that Twitter is announcing is that the 6-second video will be eliminated, even though 200 million people are using it.
A lot of people don't know about the 6-second video, and I was surprised at that, since they say that 200 million people are using it. I'm not sure about that figure at all. But the company was called Vine, which Twitter bought not too long ago. And you could upload at no cost to you, except for the online time, a 6-second video. And you would say to yourself, well, what can I do in 6 seconds that anybody would be interested in? So I browsed through Vine yesterday. And I was fascinated by what you could squeeze into 6 seconds. Absolutely. They told the whole life of a cat in 6 seconds. They showed a dog and his personal reaction to gravity and water in 6 seconds. Things like that can be done in 6 seconds. The only problem is I'm not going to pay to watch it.
Well, can I tell you something? Can I tell you what I would have tried to do with 200 million users? Is I would say that when a tweet goes out, there is a 6-second video, and if you don't want it, you just pay to not have it.
Who's going to pay to not have it?
All those who are on Twitter.
No, they're not.
Now, wait a minute. YouTube, as you know, has a 3-second ad that you can skip, and if you don't want to see that, you could pay and you can...
Go into YouTube Red,
yeah.
But... That's the same thing that I'm talking about. If somebody is using Twitter free and he's using Vine free, it's going to be virtually impossible to convert them over to a subscription.
Now, I just want to mention that we're starting something new this week, and I asked Joe to do it, is that I prepared the material, and I've come up with a bunch of tweets that I told Joe to review and send out. And that we're going to start doing this so that you can know ahead of time what we're going to be talking about.
Well, the reason we're doing this is because, what is it, Dark Knight sent me a tweet saying, why don't I do this? And I thought about it, and I sent it on to Hank and said, if you do it, I'll do it.
The thing is, we cover a lot of material, and with that 140 characters, it's going to be a number of tweets.
Well, I sent out this week, I think I sent out five. So
we're going to try to do that on a regular basis. So if you want to join us, how can they join us?
It's on we're on Twitter at PC Radio 212. Why 212? That's the New York area code.
Why don't you repeat that again, Joe?
At PC Radio 212.
Now, we talk about Twitter having their problems, and they are having problems. They're laying off 8% of their staff.
How many people is that?
It's about 350 people. So they have about 4,000 people, and they're laying off 300 plus people. That's a sizable chunk.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Now, there was something that was upsetting you, and to me, it didn't upset me, but only because I feel that social media is more a conduit, more of a utility, whereas other people feel that social media has a responsibility, and that's a fact that Facebook allow users or advertisers to exclude users by race.
It's not a question, Hank, of what you just said about me. It's a question of enabling people to break the Federal Fair Housing Act. This is a law. This is not an opinion. This is a law to protect any number of people who have faced prejudice in their lives. You can, using the Facebook parameters, say you're interested in not showing your ad to African Americans, Asian Americans, Native Americans, Jewish Americans, Christian Americans. You can pick out the demographics. Well, if you can pick out the demographics, you can run your ad. You don't have to say in your ad, I won't sell this to, or I won't rent this to an Asian American. You just simply will avoid showing them the ad. And the attitude is, you're not breaking the law. Yes, you are. You definitely are.
I disagree only because I am also involved with public access television, and we had something very similar to that where we knew, and I just won't be specific about it, because it had to do with hate speech, where someone advocated the assassination of a political leader, and we said, no, we're not going to put it on. We got taken to court, and you know what? We are only a conduit as a utility, and the person has a right to free speech. And whether you agree or disagree, you could take them to court on it. But you as a carrier, or in this case, where we would be referring to Facebook as a social media, you're not a party of it. In other words, you can't be sued on it.
Unfortunately, Hank, you are totally, completely, and irretrievably wrong.
Well,
you don't understand the federal law, and when you don't understand the law, you can interpret it differently.
No, I understand federal law when you got sued and you got taken to court, okay?
But that's not this law. This law says just the act of prejudice in renting housing or selling housing is against the law.
Yes.
Now, no newspaper is allowed to carry such advertising. No TV station is allowed to carry such advertising. Facebook's point is, well, nobody has said that we can't carry this kind of advertising and we cannot enable it. It's not so much they're carrying the advertising. They're making it easy for hateful, disgusting people like Donald Trump's family was 30 years ago. He was stopped by the federal government. He was stopped, he paid a fine, and he never did it again. That's what has to happen here.
Well, let me put it this way, Joe. It will probably work itself out. Either Facebook will say, we're going to stop it, or if they don't, it'll go through the courts and we'll find out.
Well, the interesting thing is, I don't know who brought this to our attention the other day.
Well, actually, I've been, in the last 2 days, everyone's been picking it up now.
Yes, no, but it came out, that was the first time I heard about it. I immediately went over to Facebook thinking this was a complete misunderstanding. It wasn't. It was a clever usage of tools that Facebook built into their advertising.
Let me put it this way. It was under the radar for 2 weeks, and you brought it to my attention 2 weeks ago, and I said, we'll cover it, and we are now.
And okay? Now the whole world is covering it. So Facebook, indeed, Zuckerberg and his people might drop it. I hope they do.
Okay. Now, there was another item that got my attention, and I mentioned it to you, and you say, Joe, I said, Joe, millennials are more likely to fall for tech support scams than baby boomers. You say, oh, come on. You mean the millennials are smarter and there are more of them falling for these scams? And you say, where do you get that from? I said, well, Microsoft did a study, and according to the Microsoft study, those between the age of 18 to 34, half of them got scammed. That's a very high number. Between the age of 36 to 54, 34%. And people 55 and over, only 17%.
Yeah, but this is again, Hank, one
wait,
of
wait,
those
wait,
things.
Wait, let me finish. And then you say, oh, come on, that's just Microsoft. But an independent study, the Better Business Bureau did a similar study, and they found that, now the numbers are not the same, but the ratio is there. Between the age of 25 to 34, 30% got scammed. And over 55, only 10%. But you know what the Better Business Bureau said? Older people may be more savvier than younger ones. Nah, that's because they're less likely to be impulse buyers than younger consumers and less likely to make purchases online where many scams happen.
And for this particular scam, there's another reason. I thought about it quite a bit since Hank brought this to my attention. Over 50, a lot of people don't have computers. Some of them do have smartphones. Some of them have computers, but not a lot.
No. These are people with computers. Otherwise, they wouldn't be part of the survey.
Why not?
Well, because they don't have a computer. This is people with computers now, okay?
It's specified by
yes.
Microsoft? Specified.
Yes.
All right. Then it's not just that. But I know this, that there's an elderly woman in my building that I sometimes help out. She would no more accept a phone call. If she got a phone call saying, your computer is broken, she would say, no, it's not, and hang up.
Well, Joe, let me just say that with the Better Business Bureau, they also they did a compilation on the top 10 scams of 2015, of last year. And if people are interested, I'm going to go through maybe the first two or three, because those are, you probably heard of them, okay? I know one of them, just about everyone has heard of. But if you just do a search on Better Business Bureau top 10 scams of 2015, to me, the top one is a tax scam. Someone calls you claiming to be from the IRS and says you owe back taxes and you'll be arrested or face legal consequences if you don't pay. And, of course, if you say, okay, I'll pay, they'll give you an address to send the money to. I can't believe people are falling for that.
Actually, if you go to the FTC.gov website, and you'll see all the scams listed, and they point out in several cases that Microsoft never calls.
No, this is the IRS now.
No, Microsoft never calls a Windows user. The IRS never calls to collect a debt. The police department never calls to enforce a warrant. And they have statements like this all the way down the line. Just think of this. If somebody calls you on the phone who's not your mother-in-law, your son-in-law, your daughter-in-law, your wife, somebody who's not immediate family, and they want anything from you, even if they want to give you something, hang up.
Well, I know that the other one that is really a lot of people have heard about, okay, is the tech support scam. You're contacted by a technician saying that your computer has a virus or a security threat, and they can fix it for you for a fee, and that's how you get caught. Now, this one, I happen to know four people that got hit with this, and they went for it. I can't believe it.
People you know.
Yes.
I've gotten to the point.
By the way, you know how they got taken in?
How?
They were told, I am a Microsoft certified technician.
That's right.
And the implication is they're a Microsoft employee. But the Microsoft certified does not make you an employee.
I hope nobody will think that I'm a racist for making the following statement. But every one of those tech supports that has called me, and I've gotten five of them so far, have had South Asian accents. Does that mean that everybody from India is a criminal? No, it doesn't, not by a long shot. Does it mean that everybody who's a technician from India is a criminal? No, it doesn't mean that either. It means that I've gotten five calls from Indians or from South Asians.
No, not Indians. People with that accent that may be Indians. Let's not...
I agree with you, Hank. That I overstated it. Nevertheless, I have never gotten such a call with somebody with an Irish or Australian accent.
What is an Irish accent?
You don't know?
No.
It's very noticeable and very recognizable, yeah. And so is the Australian.
Joe, there's another item I want to cover before we do that. You know, the Personal Computer Show is an extension of local computer clubs, and I do want to make mention of meetings coming up, and we support the, local computer clubs, and all these announcements I'm making are open to the public. There's no fee, there's no admission charge, anything at all, and I'm familiar with many of these clubs, and they do it because they're there to educate the public.
One of the things I'd like to tell you, though, is that this is a podcast on PRN. It's kept up on the archives for 5 weeks so that you can download it and listen to it at any time you want. So when you hear Hank announcing a meeting, please pay particular attention to the date. He always gives the date of the meeting. I know it goes through fast. And if he gives a phone number or a date, he's only saying that for this particular date, at this particular meeting, this particular phone number is usable. He's not guaranteeing anything.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that most, not all, but most of the information is repeated or specified on our website. That's pcradioshow.org. On the left-hand side is a column that says announcement. Just go to announcement, and most of the meetings are, we maintain those meeting dates. The Westchester PC User Group will be having a meeting tomorrow, Thursday, November the 3rd, and their topic of presentation is contact marketing, and it will be held at 7 p.m. tomorrow at the Keller Williams Realty, 120 Bloomingdale Road, first floor in White Plains, New York. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey, ACGNJ, has a presentation on the Lambda Calculus and Other Esoteric Impractical Topics. Friday, November the 4th, meeting time is 8 p.m. It's going to be held at Scotch Plains Rescue Squad, Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Rockland PC User Group will be having their general meeting Tuesday, November the 8th, on Election Day at 7:15 p.m., and the meeting is held in the Rassel Room on the fourth floor of the Palisade Mall in West Nyack, New York. The New York Amateur Computer Club will have a meeting next week, after Labor Day, on Thursday, November the 10th.
On Labor Day?
No, I said not Labor Day, after Election Day, on November the 10th, on how Internet voting leads to a stronger democracy. That's Thursday, November the 10th, after Election Day, at NYU 32 Waverly Place, Silver Building, room 414. The Brookdale Computer User Group will be giving a presentation on Riding the Mobile Digital Revolution. Tuesday, November the 29th, meeting time 7 p.m., building MAS, room 100, Brookdale Community College in Lincroft, New Jersey. The Princeton PC User Group will be having a holiday presentation on Riding the Mobile Digital Revolution. So this is probably whoever is giving it also at Brookdale and Princeton. Tuesday, November the 22nd, 7 p.m., Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Now, the next meeting, if you go to our website, you won't find it. If you go to their website, you won't find it because they have not maintained their website. But it's the Icon PC User Group. I just hope that they... You know, I it's like pulling teeth to find out from them. But we'd be happy to make announcements for them. And they're going to be having a presentation on fabulous freeware on Friday, December the 2nd. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Brentwood Public Library, located on 2nd Avenue and 4th Street in Brentwood, Long Island. And for those who are members of the Icon PC User Group, you know, that website with that meeting date of 2013, just get rid of it or just please update it. And finally, the Danbury Area Computer Society will have a presentation on Tuesday, December the 6th at 7:30 p.m. The topic is cable TV cord cutting, and it's going to be held at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. And Joe, for those who want us to make an announcement with them, what do they do?
You can send us email, if you have such a thing, pcradio@pcradioshow.org, or you can address it directly to Hank@pcradioshow.org. Hank, I got a question for you. We're now at November 2nd, 3rd?
2nd.
2nd. Why are we giving December meetings? Who's going to remember for a full month?
Well, so that people can either plan on it or be aware of it and they can make plans. If you tell them a week before and say, oh, if I had known, you know, I just set up another meeting. That's the reason why.
Yeah, but sometimes I can remember if you tell me a week before.
Well, you know what? Remember now, we have podcasts so that sometimes people get it a week, 2 weeks later. And so they'll know, okay? Now, one of the things that I've been trying to get out, and I said to Joe, you know what? We got to get this information out, okay? And for those who had upgraded their system from Windows 7, 8.1 to Windows 10, and you went through the upgrade process, you have Windows 10 running, and that's great, okay? Now, the reason why I want to bring this up is because a couple of people that called me up, what happened was that they got scammed, and it wasn't ransomware, but they got talked into by a technician to allow him to get into the system, and they modified the system. And so I told one person, tell you what, you can do a restore and bring it back to, they went from 7 to 10, and they screwed up their Windows 10. I said, tell you what you do. What you do is you could bring it back to 7, okay? And he calls me up last night, or actually, a little earlier than that. He said, I tried it. Didn't work. What happened was that the scammer made modifications so that when he's on 10, he couldn't go back to 7.
Why would the scammer do that?
He wants you to call him up to, and
they'll fix it.
Yeah. Now, so for those who have upgraded from 7, 8, or 8.1 to 10, and you went through the upgrade process, you really should have a nice clean copy. Now, another person called me up and says, you know what? I did it, and all that bloatware that came with 7, it got carried forward to 10. How do I get a nice clean copy of Windows 10 and still have it legally activated? Yes, there's a way of doing it, and guess who's making it available? Microsoft. Okay, so here's how I'm going to tell you how to do it, all right? Now, there's a big URL, and I'm not going to give you the big URL because you're not going to remember it. Go to Microsoft.com. There's a tab in Microsoft.com. Go to support. And then there's a long rectangular window that's called search. And this is the program that you want to do a search on. Refresh window tool. Refresh Windows 2. That's refreshwindowstool. That's it. And that will bring you to the program that you can download, and it'll run through your program, and it will clean out your machine. Now, you have to understand that when it cleans it out, it will keep your data, but your applications will be gone. So that's one of the things, but at least, you could have a nice clean copy of Windows 10. So let me repeat that again. That's go to Microsoft.com, go to the support page, and in the search bar, key in Refresh Windows Tool. And that will uninstall the bloatware. It will uninstall everything. It will give you a nice clean copy of Windows 10, but you will still have your data. In other words, it won't touch your data. But I would recommend that you back up your whole system to begin with.
Hank, I don't understand, because if this is keeping just my data but not the programs that develop that data.
In other words, my documents, they don't touch because it's empty. So if you want a nice clean copy, just empty out my documents, empty out my downloads.
What about my programs?
Your programs are taken off.
All my third-party programs?
And the reason why is because to give you a clean copy, they have to clean out the registry. And the registry is operating parameters for programs. So to make sure that the scammers or whoever, the bloatware, they modify registry, and that is what's locking up people from getting a clean copy.
So if I have any programs on my computer other than the Microsoft operating system, I would have to make sure before I do this that I have the distribution disk or at least download disks.
Well, I assume you have licensed copies of software and that you have,
I have a lot of copies. I have a lot of free copies.
Well, the free one you could download again, okay? But you know what? You might as well do it to get the latest copy.
So you have to download your software or you have to be prepared to reinstall your software from the original distribution disk if you have it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you were...
Wait, I got another question for
you. Yeah, okay. You always have questions.
I do. What if I don't have the original distribution disk? Is there any way I can save my copy of that program?
Very difficult, only because the operating parameters are separate from the registry itself. And unless you are familiar with how the registry for the application is set up and you tie it in together again, which very few people can understand, it's almost impossible.
How about if I used a program like PC Mover?
Where are you going to move it to?
An outboard disk.
If you think you can do it, go right. You're welcome to do it. But I would say backup. And I think for most people, if you think about it, what is licensed stuff that people use? It's Office, Photoshop, or Adobe Elements, AutoCAD. Those are big item software, and I just can't imagine people not maintaining copies of it.
No, but I know that on some of my software, particularly my backup software, they will download or hot change. I bought some software. It was at release 4 point something. It's now at release 12 point something, but I only have the original distribution disk from 4 point something.
Well, then you would load up the original and then ask and go up to the website to get an upgrade. Okay? Now, the only thing that is what the gotcha is going to be, okay, I'm going to tell you, is that in Windows 7, if you had converted, let's say you went from Windows XP to Windows 7, and you had an old legacy peripheral device like a scanner, and Windows 7 will allow you to, you could go through the emulation of Windows XP to install the driver in Windows 7, and most often, when you convert it to 10, for most people, it gets converted properly, and you can run it. Now your whole idea is how do you get back to get those drivers to get run, okay? That would probably be the only thing I could see that would catch you.
And how can you do that?
Well, maybe you tell your significant others it's time I'd like to buy another device. Hey, look, with progress, there's always a price with it, okay? Joe, you had pointed out a news item to me. And it was a big news item, but when you read the content of it, wait a minute. You know, how often do we go through the internet where the news item headline doesn't fit the content?
I'd say no more than 400 or 500 times a day.
The one that you pointed out to me was Georgia voting machines suspected of flipping presidential votes.
Now, when you read that as a headline, you're not thinking...
You think it's rigged, right?
What you're saying is, the whole election could go down if that happens. But as you get into the story, it's very important that you notice that the headline was not a plural for the machine. It was a singular. A machine, one machine was suspected.
For one user.
For one user was suspected of flipping one vote.
And they found the problem. The problem was calibration, because you have to touch the screen, and it was touching the.
But there's no way you could tell that from the headline.
Well, don't you believe everything you read in headlines?
Absolutely.
So now, what we're telling people is, if you find a headline that it got your attention, read it again because it's.
But even,
we get so much of that.
Even forget the headline, which is generally written by somebody other than the reporter who wrote the story. Never, new rule. Who is it who says new rules? New rule, never believe anything on the internet that you only get from one source. Always double check. If it's too strange or too good or too bad to believe, don't believe it. There's no law that says you have to believe it.
Well, there was a you know, it was in the news, so I guess, you know, first of all, the personal computer show is, if we have any advocacy at all, it's the consumer. That's what we always think of first. But you probably heard the term bleach bit. Okay, now bleach bit, some people will call it was acid. It's not acid. Okay, it's a piece of software, and some people really think it's a piece of acid. And I said, you know what? Let me look into it. Okay, what bleach bit does is, it's a piece of software. It's open source software, by the way, and it allows people to say, okay, I want to use it, and I want to erase a file. Or delete a file, but in deleting the file, I can then make sure that it's not just the header saying the space is available, but to write over that space N times.
Wasn't there a piece of software a few years ago called Nuclear or something?
No, wait. Let me finish this, okay? Now, there is a piece of software that does that today. It's called CCleaner, except it does it just once. And what this does is that it does it more than once to make sure that it's as clean as possible. And I said to myself, wait a minute, there is another program called DBAN, D-B-A-N, and that is originally from written so that it met the Department of Defense rules for certification. I said, you know what? I haven't seen it in a while. So I went to the Department of Defense on how do you destroy data. Remember the old days, they say, if you write over the space 7 times or 30 times or N times, they don't say that anymore. Do you know what the new rule is? I'm going to read it to you, Joe. You know what they say on the magnetic disk? You can use a degausser, type 1, or you can use a type 2 degausser, or disintegrate, incinerate, pulverize, shred, or melt. In other words, it's like it's not writing over how many times because it's still recoverable. So the bleach bit that was done by software, it could have been recovered if they had expended any effort on it. So now I'm familiar with a degausser because I remember in the old days, remember we were in this recording studio and they had this big, large degausser?
Well, that was so that they could fit the 12-inch tape rolls on
it. And then come up when you after you magnetically use it, it would be like brand new, everything is absolutely clean, is void of any data. So I said, okay, that's the new recommendation by the DOD. And I looked up how much a degausser costs. You know how much a magnetic degausser costs today?
Yes, you told me. I didn't believe it, but I checked, and you're right.
Yeah. Now, I'm talking about a degausser that meets DOD requirements, okay? And a stationary one, a large one that does it quickly. In other words, the ability to, like, say, if I had 30 hard disk drives, I can, in 1 minute, clean 30 hard disk drives in one minute. In other words, 30 of them, I can clean it. Now, they have the portable type where it takes 2 minutes to clean one drive, and there's a big difference in time, but there's a difference in time. The large one, it's $15,000 to $17,000 for a degausser.
You tell me that so I'll feel good when you buy one for me?
Now, the portable one is about $550, okay? Now, there is a way that they have not recommended, but I've done some research on it. Suppose you say, look, I don't have $15,000, $17,000 to make sure that this machine I want to give to the church, that all the information is, gone, it's erased, it's nicely clean, or nor do I have $550 to buy a portable unit, there is something else you can do. And this may or may not work all the time, but let me tell you what it is, all right? With most manufacturers like Seagate and Western Digital, I know with Western Digital, almost every model drive they have, you can download a low-level format program. With a low-level format program, what it does is that it rewrites all the timing bits on it, so it's virtually impossible to recover any data at all, Joe. So so if you want to donate equipment, look at it, see if it's available. If not, you could take what's been reported. One of the operatives did. They took a sledgehammer and just smash it.
That usually works.
But you got to make sure it's smashed because, the cover is pretty strong.
We have just a few more minutes, Hank, and I again want to talk about the tech tip you started to tell us about last week. You don't know which one I'm referring to.
No, you have to remind me.
I can't remind you. My notes aren't with me.
Well, I do want to cover one other item in the time we have left, is that the iPhone 7 S and those with the Intel modem as opposed to the Qualcomm modem, it's been reported that the those with the Intel modem perform poorly compared to the one with a Qualcomm chip in low signal areas. So that's a big deal.
That is a big deal. What I wanted to ask you about is the new Google Pixel telephone.
Well, I was going to bring that up, but I didn't cover that last week.
I thought you did. I'm sorry. But the question that I've been asked is, why is the back of it made of glass so that if you drop it, you really now have a splintered back?
Well, the reason why they have a glass back is so that it does not interfere with the antenna signal. If you put metal on it, it interferes with it. And what it is that it gives you a stronger signal. So if you don't like the look, if you don't like that see-through look, don't get it. I'm talking about the Pixel, both models of it. And now, by the way, you looked at it.
I looked at both models of it. And
so what do you think?
I looked at it literally. I looked at it. I think they're very pretty. That's all I can tell you. But I am going to try and get some to test, and I'll be happy to give you a report on it. Hank, what I was thinking of before when I said, wasn't there an old-time program that would nuke a drive and make it safe? And I couldn't think of the name. So while you were talking, I looked it up, and it was called Derek's Boot and Nuke.
That's D-Ban.
But you said D-Ban. You didn't say Derek's Boot and Nuke. And it really does work.
Except that the DOD does no longer recommend it.
The DOD probably has found a way of making what they did not as secure as we think. But there's two kinds of security you need. There's one kind of security if you're going to give your drive to somebody from the church or you're just going to throw it out and to the garbage. And there's another type if you think that the KGB is going to take it and try and get the data off it.
Well, you know, when we talk about giving equipment away, everyone thinks of the hard drive, but if you have a solid-state drive, that's different, okay? With a solid-state drive, that's really memory. So, and with memory, it's different.
How do you overwrite the memory?
You just overwrite it, okay? Now, have you ever given a printer away?
Not a printer with any significant memory.
Guess what? So all printers have memory.
Yes.
So one of the recommendations that the DOD specify is that, now this is one most people don't think about. Suppose it's an impact printer. Make sure the ribbon is out and it's destroyed because all that information's on the ribbon.
Yeah, that was used in a story some years ago. There's another thing, though, if you have a printer, especially if you have one of the new internet-ready printers, they've got a sizable piece of memory in there, and they will remember the last 5 or 6 documents you printed. Same thing with a copying machine.
Now, if you happen to have an impact printer, look at that roller, the platen, because sometimes information can be, you don't have paper in there and it strikes it.
How many of the folks listening right now, Hank, do you think are members of MI6 or the CIA or the NSA? Because they're the only ones who are going to have to worry about this.
You know, Joe, we always talk about someone and you say, oh, yeah, you're right, okay? Murphy's Law. And you know what Murphy's Law is, right?
Do you know what Murphy's corollary to Murphy's Law is?
What is it?
You know, Murphy's Law was, anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Now,
the corollary to that is Murphy was an optimist.
Now, if you have a laser printer, what do you think their recommendation is? Do a test print, and that will pretty much clear out the buffers because the test print will fill up that buffer because it goes through, it's normally they print 4 or 5 pages when you go through a test print on a laser printer.
No, actually, on my laser printer, it prints one page.
Hey, Joe, you know what? I'm having fun, but we're running out of time, and I just want to say that we got a lot of material, and in the future, first of all, I have to apologize. You tweeted, and we didn't cover one or two items, and, well, we'll make good on it next week.
And we will in the future try and accomplish it in a more easy, readable way, but I don't know what
it
is yet.
Well, the reason why was we had a couple of phone calls, and you know what? I don't mind that at all. And for those that didn't get us, get the phone number is 888-874-4888, and in the future, I'll mention it again. We'll take phone calls.
But we only take phone calls when we're on the air from 6 to 7 on Wednesday nights.
Eastern Time. Now, the website for the Personal Computer Show is pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at pcradio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. on prn.fm and at 9 p.m. on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York. In the meantime, stay in touch, keep on computing, and back up. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, our webmaster, we thank you for listening. Until we meet again, same station, same time next week, happy computing, and good night.